podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. And by Lookout, a mobile security company trusted by over 40 million customers. Lookout specializes in stopping new cyber threats, finding lost or stolen phones, and backing up data. Protect your Android device now by visiting lookout.com/AAA for the free download. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 123. That's 123. Neat. Recorded on Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I had a brain fart there for a second. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
Yep. And here we are in podcast art form, spread out on the table.
Our Android avatars.
It's kind of crazy how much that looks like us. Like, I feel like I'm looking at our monitor right now.
I really missed that parrot.
Yeah. Meridian ideal. I forgot my red scarf, but otherwise, yeah.
It's a sassy scarf.
The Android yourself thing didn't really take off, did it?
Well, we sure embraced it.
Yeah, we did. I feel like nobody else really went with it.
I was so excited to Android myself when I started the show, so I think it counts.
Excellent. Well, we've certainly put it to good use. I wish I had thought about this before now, but Russell Hawley, Geek.com, it's awesome having you on the show. I wish I would have thought to have you send us an Androidify of yourself, and we'd have you on the table with us.
I probably would have spent all day on it, too. Like, I remember when that first came out, I wasted way more time than I'm willing to admit on that thing.
It was Androidify. That's what it was called. Yeah, thank you, chat room. Thank you.
Yep, Androidify. And, I mean, that's an actual Google app, right?
Yeah, somebody in Google spent time, probably not during their 20% anymore, but they spent some time doing that.
I hear that the 20%, more or less, is going away, won't see apps like Androidify anymore.
Yep, that's what I heard as well, too. The end of innovation at Google is upon us. As Larry continues to clutch down on the organization.
It's a little sad, don't you think?
I think
that's true.
I feel like the Google as a company's DNA, as cheesy as it is to say that, is innovation. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to get stuff that's going to be...
Regardless.
You're going to get stuff in the 105% versus the 80-20. Like, people are just going to stay later to do stuff like that. I think that's what's going to happen. That's just me.
Cool. So it's going to start sucking to work there? Because you're going to have to stay like, you're going to have to do 120.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Russell, it is great to have you back. It's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thanks for bringing your insight. We actually have some of your stories in the rundown to talk about today. We're going to be discussing a lot of interesting stuff. Waze integration with Maps. We've kind of been wondering what's going to happen there. We're starting to see the results. Samsung's rumored smartwatch. There's a few rumors in the show today.
What's a good show without some?
I know. Like, how is that different from any other show that we do? Some killer upgrades to Google Plus and the YouTube apps. Really like the upgrades to those apps and so much more. But let's just jump right into the news.
So the aforementioned Google Maps and Waze, the lines are beginning to blur. 3 months after Google acquired Waze, which is a hugely popular kind of crowdsourcing mapping data source or application, we're starting to see those changes integrated into Google Maps. Information shared via Waze will now surface in Google Maps, and Street View Maps as well as Google Search will now appear in Waze.
Oh, they're sharing.
So it took 3 months. Is that too long? Is that too short? Are we surprised to see it so quickly?
I'm happy to see it happen so quickly. I mean, I think that the Waze community was really worried. Like, is it going to be worth spending my time in this app if Google just is the possibility they're going to ignore it? But in fact, if you report an accident or if you report traffic conditions or whatever on Waze, it gets huge distribution now. because you know it's showing up on Google Maps. That's a great thing. I mean, it looks like Google was really serious about this acquisition. This wasn't just about talent. This was about community and about data.
And we actually have a submission. Nick Carroll sent in the screenshot of an incident that was reported via Waze showing up on Google Maps.
Yeah, Nick didn't know what was going on. I don't think that he had seen or read the story at this point. He was like, well, this is interesting. Waze is suddenly appearing in maps. So that's kind of what you would see, right? You'd see an incident. It would actually say reported via the Waze app.
That attribution is important, I think. So if you know, but the thing is, if you don't know what Waze is, you just be like, all right.
Yeah, right. Right. I don't know what that is. Yeah, Russell, what do you think about all this? Does this kind of fall in line with what you thought Google was going to do once they swallowed up Waze?
It's more than what I thought it was going to do. I mean, one of the cool things about the paranoia that came when Waze was acquired was that it was really compared to Grandstream when it was acquired for Google Voice. Mm-hmm. And that took a really long time for that integration to happen. And then the Grandstream customers kind of got shuffled out a little bit, and rubbed a bit the wrong way. This is, way, way better than that scenario. And it's really cool to see it already happening.
Yeah. Hopefully this doesn't mean that less people use Waze because now they feel like they don't need to because some of that information comes into Google Maps. I mean, isn't that kind of like starts to peel the users away from the service, and that's kind of what makes the service so useful to begin with?
Well, yeah, but I think that it's clearly not a apples and oranges kind of thing. It's like they're sharing the data. So if you're a Waze user, you're going to get updated, better map data from Google Maps. And if you're a Google Maps user, you're going to benefit from the crowdsourcing aspect of Waze.
Sure.
It looks like they're trying to play both sides from the middle. I can't tell from this whether one app is now superior than the other. They both seem enriched by each other.
Right. Yeah. And they both do, just by at their core, somewhat different things.
Yeah, exactly.
Some similar things, obviously. But yeah.
I do like the scenario of someone not knowing what Waze is and then looking. And it's like, well, what is Waze? Like if there's no...
I'm surprised it's not a link. Like, you can't tap it to be like, to open the Play Store or...
Yeah,
what is this?
Yeah, or some sort of like this, submitted by... I mean, what did they exactly say, Chad? Can you pull it back up? If it said some sort of like, crowdsourced report or something like that.
User submitted, user generated.
It's just accident on Octavia... Oh, wow, that's right where I live. Accident on Octavia Boulevard reported via Waze app. I think that reported via Waze app could be explained a little better by Google.
It seems like they're trying to cover their behind a little bit. Like, hey, just in case this isn't right, this is just somebody told us about this via Waze.
Yeah, we can't take any ownership of that at all.
Right, but just in case there's something here, we knew about it because somebody told us on Waze. Still, it is weird that they don't at least make it, that you can tap on it to go to the Waze app, or that it isn't like, hey, this is submitted by a user.
Right.
I still think it's great. I think they did a lot more with it than I expected.
Absolutely. And this is the kind of information that I hoped Maps just as a platform would kind of see as a result of them buying Waze.
So. And honestly, it's probably also a testament to the Google Maps APIs as well as whatever Waze developed on their side that they're able to plug them together so quickly.
Mm-hmm. So quickly, yeah.
Yeah. So, because we all know what that's like when they don't play nicely, and then you've got to figure out and you got to hack it and.
Okay, so we've started to see the lines blurring. How long until we can start reporting incidents from within Google Maps?
That's when you worry about how long Waze exists, because once they add that to Google Maps, then why does Waze exist?
Well, it seems unlikely, at least for a while, that Google's going to let you, if it does allow you to report, that it'll allow you to report things like speed traps and stuff like that. Because that's one of the things that makes Waze, useful. The traffic thing is really cool, but I think a lot of people use Waze for the speed traps and that kind of thing, to know when there are police on the road, maybe to, not drive as well as you maybe should.
Right, right.
But yeah, I can't see that kind of stuff transferring into Google right away, if at all.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Well, in other news, Android related, but really in this regard, CyanogenMod more so, they've been making some really interesting changes in the past few months. And one in particular, it just happened there. They announced the CyanogenMod account system. And Russell, I couldn't help but notice that you were fired up on Google Plus about this, and then you wrote an article at geek.com all about it. Why don't you explain for everyone watching and listening kind of what the account system is all about and why you're so fired up?
Yeah, so the idea is that the CyanogenMod team is going to create a series of tools over time, like the one that they announced last night, which was a locate and wipe, similar to the new Android Device Manager service. But in order to do that, they needed to be able to create a secure login system for users to be able to access those features, you know, either remotely or, you know, to access, you know, special features that would require a login. So to do that, they've created the CyanogenMod accounts. It's basically an identifier for CyanogenMod services. And while it starts with just this, you know, this locate and wipe thing, you know, which has the potential to offer the same kind of features that you get with the Android Device Manager, it now means that they have a mechanism to, you know, push more features using those same, you know, frames.
Mm-hmm. Do services that do this kind of thing, because we've seen this a lot already, where there's this whole crop of apps and developed by, you know, third-party developers and services offered by them that do these really cool things in Android. Then Google comes along and, oh, hey, what do you know? We have an official solution for this. How does something like CyanogenMod account system differentiate itself from the official Google thing, and should those non-official solutions be kind of concerned about the longevity of their service?
Well, so one of the big things that they announced with this particular set of features with the locate and wipe was the kind of the discovery that a lot of the services that offer that that functionality, including Google's Android Device Manager, there's some security concerns as far as, you know, if you know, in the really crazy unlikely scenario the Google servers were compromised, Google servers can see the user location, and that's, you know, accessed in plain text for you know, Google servers to use and save and do stuff with. But the CyanogenMod system, they you know, made it really clear that they were differentiating themselves by, you know, encrypting that information against the server so that only the user had access to that information.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I still don't understand. I mean, I understand why CyanogenMod exists, but I also don't get what they benefit out of doing this. I mean, I get that it's a modding platform and there are people who want to use it and people have control over it. But I mean, I know very little about it, so I defer to you. But like, they don't charge for it, right? I mean, is it a community and all that sort of stuff? Are there donations and that sort of thing? You know, Google's motivation is clear. Is to make the best product it can in order to make money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite fully understand what CyanogenMod's motives are. Is it to top Google, or is it to, you know, or to provide an alternative, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I might not be the best person to talk about this and correct me on this, because I'm sure I'm going to get some of this wrong. But CyanogenMod initially kind of came about as just kind of an alternative. I mean, the same reason all of these ROMs more or less come about, an alternative to what you already have. Hopefully, I think in a lot of ways what CyanogenMod did is it you know, initially offered a pretty flat vanilla kind of approach to it. And over time, they've realized these different ways that they can kind of keep that kind of ethos, but still offer some of these other things that maybe don't go above and beyond what some manufacturers do with their modded skins and stuff. But yeah, that has been on my mind a lot lately, which is that, you know, CyanogenMod is the alternative, and people like, you know, stock Android. CyanogenMod at this point is kind of far from stock for a number of reasons, but yeah. It kind of still is. I don't know what that invisible line is.
I look,
you know,
at CyanogenMod. I look at the XBMC projects. Mm-hmm. Project, and it's like, don't get me wrong, they're super cool, and you can hack your stuff, and you can play with it and stuff like that. But like, why? Like, I just, you know, like the
because you can,
yeah,
because you can. It's the power user version of Android, yeah, right? I mean, I think at some point, I mean, and Android is sort of the power user OS to begin with, but I think that Cyanogen just listens to the sort of the power user crowd and adds in features that maybe Google's slower to. Because they can. Although I have to tell you, with this service, so if I understand this correctly, Russell, this is a cloud service. So you create an account like on the CyanogenMod website, and so now it can wipe my device remotely if something goes wrong. And I have to tell you, when I think about CyanogenMod, I think like Kosh is this like awesome sort of Android hacker who's made this ROM for free, and that's really cool. I just don't know if that's the brand that I'm going to maybe trust with the ability to remote wipe my device. Like, I get the idea that he's saying our system is more secure and that we're not logging your location over time. But at the same time, I kind of had the same question as Ron, is like, why are you doing this? And do I, you know, I mean, I'm like, I'm uncomfortable with Google tracking my location and being able to remote wipe my device. But like, I get like, they're a huge corporation and they have pretty like, I feel like I have a really good grasp of what their goals are and what they're going to do, which is they're going to advertise to me. And I accept that as the part of using it. But I'm not sure what, I'm not sure that I would create an account on the CyanogenMod cloud service. I don't know that I'd want something like that, being able to remote wipe my device. I don't know. Maybe I'm being paranoid or too hard on, you know, on a, what's an awesome system.
I think a lot of it comes from seeing the platform grow over time. Like, I would definitely agree with you as far as the, maybe the maturity of a project like this, you know, because it's on a high level, it's no different than any other open source project. It's run by, you know, guys who are effectively doing this in their free time. And that's certainly how it started. But I think now, you know, especially over the last year, these guys have worked really hard. I think they realized just how many users they had. Mm-hmm. And so they've tried over the last year to kind of turn it into a more responsible platform. And they've done a lot of crazy stuff to do that, going as far as making it so that you don't need root access to use CyanogenMod once it's installed. So it's a significantly more secure version of Android than most of the other versions out there. And it does, you know, kind of drift a bit from the stock experience in certain ways, the kind of Android open source project. But at the same time, on a code level, it is very, very similar. So I think from a brand level, I can definitely see where you're coming from. But I think my perspective may be just a little different because I've been watching it a little closer and seen over the last year how it's really kind of grown up from a project that was done by a group of friends to something that could probably legitimately be a real distribution of Android, you know, that was put on actual devices at some point in the future.
Well, yeah. And, as I say, and what you speak of shows a certain level of responsibility by those guys, which I think is great, is that, you know, and understand it's an open source project, and I get that they have day jobs and they're doing this in their spare time, and Steve Kondik is the guy who started CyanogenMod. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that, and I think that's great, because you often don't see that level of commitment and responsibility in these kind of projects, is that there's a lot of excitement. They put something into the world, and then it just kind of stays there, or there's some hole or something like that.
And it's a huge team that works with CyanogenMod.
Yeah.
That's why they're able to port this to so many, you know, such a ridiculous amount of devices and different versions and everything.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's just interesting to see them take, because I get the modded firmware and I get the whole approach to it, but offering a, you know, a service like this, I wouldn't have predicted it. So that's interesting.
Yeah. It requires a level of user trust, and I think if you've been using CyanogenMod for a good amount of time, the trust probably isn't an issue, right? Because you rooted your phone, or, you know, and you installed this ROM and it's been working well for you. So I think there's probably a trust there. I haven't been using CyanogenMod. I haven't for a long time, just because I've been trying to keep up with stock Android.
Right.
But maybe the trust issue wouldn't be a factor. Jason, you use CyanogenMod. Would you sign up for the cloud service to do the remote wipes and that kind of thing?
I'm like right somewhere in the middle on this, because yeah, I probably would have if Google hadn't kind of come along and offered their service. And now
that's
like
the thing, yeah.
And now, like, in my head, I'm like, well, I'm going to go with the official, you know, Google solution, because that's just generally what I end up doing. I'm not running CyanogenMod now. I actually upgraded to or changed to an AOSP 4.3 version, which, by the way, just before we move on, my phone has continued to run at a great speed on 4.3. So I'm hoping that trim thing that's in effect is making a difference there. But anyway, that's so great. I moved away from CyanogenMod for the time being, but I always seem to go back. They're like it's like CyanogenMod is this kind of like ROM crack that you end up returning to for whatever reason down the line to see what, you know, how far it's come. Because to, you know, as far as the ROMs are concerned, you know, you're going to get a level of support on CyanogenMod that you're not going to get on most other ROMs. Their team is just so big and they're so dedicated, and they have a really proven track record from many years now. Yeah. And that's part of where that trust comes from, is, oh, this is a team that I follow. You know, some people, all they've ever installed on their phone or their device is CyanogenGen. They've been doing that for years now. So
five,
of course they trust.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Interesting.
So there you go.
Well, moving on to Barnes & Noble, of all people. 2 months ago, we talked about how the Nook line of tablets, the ones that didn't have e-ink displays, would be killed off because the sales were so weak. Well, Barnes & Noble has done a 180 in about face, and they announced today that the Nook tablet line will not be phased out completely. Instead, there'll be a refresh of the lines by this holiday season, this year. Barnes & Noble sounds like this is a company kind of flailing right now. They had the CEO who resigned, and then they did this kind of this about face, and they've just slashed prices on the current Nook, which is probably an indicator there's going to be a new Nook coming out. They're losing money hand over fist, but it sounds like their new plan is to commit to the Nooks and their digital content side. So I hope they can turn it around. I don't know. Do you guys, when we talked about this last time, I was kind of like, I hadn't really thought about the Nook very much. And I think that's just because I'm so kind of embedded in the full on, you know, not the e-reader market, but the kind of full tablet market. And I sort of just got sucked into Kindle. I don't know. Is this a good thing that they're keeping these, the Nooks around? Or do you think that they should have just stuck with the original plan and move forward?
You know, it's funny because, I mean, I live and breathe this stuff, you know, because my day job, I work in publishing, and a large part of my job is digital publishing. And honestly, like a couple months ago, I just dismissed the Nook as a platform in general because the sales weren't there, the demand wasn't there. I get, you know, I haven't gotten anybody asking me to get our content on the Nook.
Right.
So, you know, so clearly, you know, I figure as visible as I am, somebody would be like, hey, I want to read comic books on the Nook, you know, but it's dried up.
Because not only are you in comics and publishing, but you're also in Android.
Right, exactly.
So you're like,
somebody would, but I can't tell you the last time I've gotten anybody like that. I think we did talk about it a few months ago, but if you'd asked me a couple months ago, I thought for sure the rumors of Microsoft sniffing around this, I thought Microsoft was going to sweep in and buy the Nook platform or do something like that, but that doesn't seem to have come to fruition. You know, given that they're losing as much money as it is, given that they don't have a CEO, given that there's all these rumors of the original founder of Barnes & Noble wants to take the control of the company back and go retail only and all that sort of stuff, I got to wonder if this is some sort of move towards propping up the brand for a sale to somebody else maybe. You know, like, is this some sort of distraction tactic? I don't know. Who knows? I don't know what to make of this at all either. This definitely made me scratch my head.
Yeah, has a kind of a flick. What was it? Quickster.
Quickster
has a Quickster vibe to it.
Yes.
Well, they had already done it. Barnes & Noble had spun off the Nook division into its own company, and it hasn't performed at all. So
yeah,
And yet the Kindle's gonna sell like gangbusters this holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes you scratch your head even more if this is a good idea. In many ways kind of already lost it, especially when you're pulling it away and then you're bringing it back. Then
It is a rough landscape in publishing, let me tell you. In book business and stuff like that, the bookstores, I mean, you all see it. I mean, how often have Borders went under and Barnes & Noble's closes left and right and all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely interesting to see it kind of continue to develop and watch what Barnes & Noble does. So.
The little clip on the side might not be enough.
Clip didn't
whatever that thing was called.
It didn't resonate, whatever it was. Yeah, yeah.
It's cool. Interesting looking, but that's about it. All right, Gina, we have a voicemail.
We do.
Hey, guys.
Oh.
In regard to the Android LastPass discussion, I just wanted to say what I found easiest when using Chrome is to use the LastPass bookmarklet. Once you're at a page that needs you to log in, you just type in the first couple letters of the bookmarklet. Chrome will suggest it, put in your LastPass creds, and it'll auto-fill. Matches the experience a lot closer to the real extension until we can get a real extension. Anyway, love the show. Thanks.
I haven't used the bookmarklets. What exactly is that?
I haven't tried the bookmarklet either, but thank you so much, Anonymous. That hadn't even occurred to me that you can absolutely use bookmarklets in Chrome on Android. So I haven't tried it out. And, of course, one of the things I mentioned last week was that and the experience in Chrome on the desktop is so good with LastPass because it you know, there's the Chrome extension and autofills websites that you're logging into. But often when you're on Android, you're not logging into websites. You're logging into native apps.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to thank Dominic Clay on Twitter, who pointed out that the LastPass keyboard, which I had talked about last week, is one way to kind of make dealing with LastPass a little easier. You can enable the LastPass keyboard. That will insert username and password in both the browser and native apps. So I didn't realize that because I hadn't given it a try. So thank you to Dominic and thank you to Anonymous. So we got, there are a few more, options. We got the Bookmarklet in Chrome on Android and also that LastPass keyboard that will work across native apps and the browser.
I will tell you, I don't like the word Bookmarklet just in general. So there you go.
Okay. your political stance on bookmarklets.
Against the bookmarklets.
Yes.
It's like an adorable bookmark, like a tiny adorable bookmark.
Oh, look, it's a little bookmarklet. Oh. Come on. I gotta come up with something better than that. Bookmarklet.
I don't know. It sounds kind of cute.
Yeah.
Sounds adorable to me. All right. Great pointers. As far as LastPass is concerned, I honestly didn't realize that there was a keyboard. There was a LastPass keyboard that makes this apparently easier. So that's cool. And you could do, actually, I imagine, on the fly, the kind of notification pull down to switch it temporarily so that you don't set that as your keyboard full time, which you probably don't want the LastPass keyboard as your keyboard full time.
It
so
really that's something is a terrible
that you word. Can just switch to when you need it. So great, great tips. Let's take a break and thank one of our sponsors of today's episode. Love the folks at Gazelle. If you're looking to smell your smartphone, don't do that. Sorry, Ron. Didn't mean to make you spit out your. Instead, if what you would like to do is sell your smartphone or tablet or device, Gazelle is the right place to do that. Do you want the new Galaxy S4, maybe the HTC One, the iPhone 5? There's a new iPhone supposedly coming out on the horizon. It might even be gold. If that strikes your fancy.
Jobs would never let that happen.
There's a lot to say about that, but we won't get into it. You can sell your current device before it loses value. These devices do not gain value over time. They lose it. So what you can do with Gazelle, it's very simple, actually. You go to the site. You use their very easy-to-use UI. You select what kind of device you have. You say, I've got a tablet, and it's made by Samsung, and oh, there's the note, and you pull it up, and everything gives you the pictures, it gives you the carriers that you select, what carrier it's on, how much capacity it has. You tell Gazelle what the condition of your device is, if it's in flawless condition. You go ahead and through, and they'll give you an offer, and that offer is locked in for 30 days. That doesn't mean that you have to send that device back to them immediately. You have 30 days to do that. So that price won't change and your offer is good for those 30 days. So particularly when a new device is right around the corner, an announcement is coming, lock that in early. Then once the device is announced and everybody else goes to sell their device, you're sitting on top of the world because you got more money than everybody else. Moo-hoo, ha ha ha. So go to gazelle.com, take a look at the devices that you can sell back. You might just have these devices sitting around in a drawer gathering dust. Instead, sell it to Gazelle and use that money to put into more awesome tech for your collection. They just have a number of different devices and everything. So really just good idea to just go and take a look. They also take back MacBooks, Macs, iPods, if you have those, iPads, all those different types of devices. Check them out. They're very trustworthy, and they've been doing this for a long time. It's completely risk-free, and you get payment fast, usually within a few days of the item being received. So what's your iPhone, your Samsung, or other Android smartphone worth? All you need to do is take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out for yourself. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them so much for sponsoring All About Android and the Twit Network. You guys continue to be awesome, so thank you. All right, let's move on to hardware. So, Moto X. We have a date.
Got a date.
Got a hot date with the Moto X.
Set your calendar.
Finally has a date, and it's this week. Actually landing on AT&T here in the U.S., August 23rd. That's complete with the Moto Maker customization. AT&T, at least in the early days of the Moto X release, is the only way to get that customization, right, which is kind of crazy. However, here's the caveat. If you are hot on the idea of getting it engraved with something special, you're going to have to wait. And engraving is being postponed for the launch. They say that test engraving was not up to Motorola's standards. They have no clue when that will be added back into the plan, but for now, engraving is out. So that's one less way that you can customize your Moto X.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, I never understood the engraving thing. I mean, I know people, Apple did it with the iPods and the iPad, and I don't want engraving on mine.
Well, yeah. I did it with the Nexus One when the Nexus, that was the first Android phone I think that offered that, was the Google Nexus One, and I did that. And
I forgot they offered that.
Yep. So that was the first one, and so it was kind of cool to see it come back, because a lot of people really liked it on the Nexus One.
Yeah. What did you engrave on your Nexus One? I have to know.
I put all three of my kids' names on it.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute.
Boom.
I like that that Motorola's guidelines, the profanity filter, also blocks. You're not allowed to engrave Apple, Google, Samsung, or Droid onto your Moto X.
What?
Okay. Yeah.
You can't use the word Android. You can't. There's a lot of them.
Wow. Huh. Not allowing you to engrave Android seems like a...
Like, what about my Android? Or like...
Yeah.
I think it was like to stop someone just from saying, you know, Android sucks or something like that. And so they just blocked it, you know, all the way at the top so that no one was clever. They're really polite about it, too.
Yeah. We'd rather you not say that. How about another try?
Yeah, that's great.
Pretty pleased with the cherry on the top.
They banned Apple. I thought you said something different, Gina. And then I was like, oh, can we curse on the show?
Oh, no, I did not say. No, there is a profanity filter. I didn't mention any of the profanities, but the profanity filter also includes Google, Samsung, Droid, and Apple.
Yeah. Apple sounded like something else, that's all.
You're right. Didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Anyway. It sounds like this engraving thing just sounded like a really good thing to sort of mention at launch, and they just obviously didn't have it down in time.
Well, yeah, I mean,
this is just part of the whole customization part of their marketing pitch, and they just didn't get it ready in time.
If it doesn't
I don't think people are clamoring for engraving necessarily.
I don't know, but the device is all about customization. That's a pretty
but if it comes out of a quality issue, like if they can't
get it. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think it's it probably had all the best intention to do it, and then you know, so I would rather see them put it off than delay the launch for it, you know.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Absolutely. No, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's the right call as far as I'm concerned.
I agree with that. And just for what it's worth, we haven't heard, I don't believe, any official dates for any of the other carriers at this point. Verizon is expected to offer for August 29th, though no confirmation of that quite yet. I think that was because of some like leaked inventory thing. We see those all the time, and half the time they don't end up being real. Well, you know.
And no word when or even if a Google Play Edition will be out either.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So anyways, there you go. AT&T, if you're hot on the Moto X, that's where you go right now.
So one of the forbidden words you cannot engrave on your Moto X, when you can, Samsung. looks like Samsung got
that.
A smartwatch. I know.
Word. So bad. Hold
Samsung is be launching a smartwatch, reports GigaOm. O'Malik's sources say that the Galaxy Gear smartwatch by Samsung will be announced on September 4th in a launch event that will purportedly happen in Berlin and New York. And GigaOm got quite a few details about what this smartwatch is supposedly going to look like. Samsung has apparently ceded many different variations of the watch design to developers. All of them had square OLED screens, 3-inch watch face, dual core processor. The strap has an integrated camera. The clasp houses tiny speakers. Mm-hmm. It's got NFC, Bluetooth 4.0, and an accelerometer, which allows the watch to turn on when you move it up toward your eye. The test devices are based on Android 4.1 and 4.2, and there's supposedly tight syncing between the watch, phone, and tablets. So if you're looking for a particular email on your watch, your phone will be at the same place if you pick up that device. It will be at the same place to pick up the device. The connection will use Samsung's proprietary accessory protocol, and will use Bluetooth LE as the network transport. It's a little bit worrisome because it sounds like you may have to also have a Samsung phone to work with the watch. And the apps for the watch as well will not come from the Google Play Store, but they'll come from a Samsung app store. The Verge reports that this Galaxy Gear smartwatch is real, but that you will not be able to make calls from the watch, which was an initial report from Bloomberg had said that this is actually going to be a watch phone, that you could hold it up and talk to it. That's not the case. The watch links to your phone. Mm-hmm. So it works with your phones. So it looks like Samsung's just trying to get in front of Apple, in front of Apple's iWatch launch, and this is going to be in the next couple weeks, September 4th.
This is frustrating. Because it's like, if you look at those, if you look at those hardware specs, that's, it's super cool. You know, like NFC and Bluetooth, and the strap has a camera, and the class has speakers and the accelerometer and stuff like that. But then I hear proprietary protocol and Samsung App Store, and I just want to bang my head on the table because it's just like, no. But
I gotta tell you though, these things look really cool. I don't wear a watch, but these things look really cool. If they can't talk to my HTC One, I'm not gonna do it. But it sounds really good, except for that whole proprietary thing.
I feel like we're on the eve of a revolution with watches. I feel like it's probably gonna be next year or maybe as soon as September. Who knows? But I feel like we're gonna, like, between the Pebble and all this sort of stuff, we're inching ever closer. And I think next year is gonna be a big watch year. It's easy for me to say that now after 8 months of us talking about all the watches.
I feel like the
watch thing is happening.
Is going to be a big deal. It's going to be in the news a lot, I think. Russell, are you pro watch? What do you think about this whole trend?
So, we've got these existing smartwatches, which are cool, but they're basically receptacles for notifications,
right?
Which are ultimately not particularly useful. They can be for, you know, really active people who just, you know, can't stand that 3 seconds to pull their phone out of their pocket. And I say that ironically as a Google Glass user, but,
right.
The whole idea behind the smartwatch that has these kind of added features that'll actually cooperate with a phone are a lot more exciting. Things that'll, you know, actually cause value add, I think will be a way bigger deal. And I think Samsung's going to do something pretty cool. And I think Motorola, there was a bunch of talk about that as well. So I think it'll be, this year will be really cool for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Samsung's going to steal the spotlight if they get this out.
They do.
Or Apple supposedly gets whatever the heck they have.
I did have an interesting thought about Google Glass. You mentioned Google Glass. I got the latest issue of Wired in the mail, like the print version. And, you know, they've got their jargon watch, you know, like the little, you know, jargon words. And one of the jargon words was glass hole. And I was just like, hey, way to go, Wired. Way to be on right on top of that. Like, and then I realized, what was that? 2 months ago, 3 months ago, like, I guess the long lead times of magazines, but there's your digital divide. Anyway, so we do love the rumors, and there's some more fun rumors to play with here. First up, rumors of the Nexus 5 coming from LG. The LG G2 might be the base of the new Nexus 5. Rumors around that. The 5.2-inch display, Qualcomm Snapdragon 800, and slightly different design. But what's noticeable is that it's made completely of glass on the back as opposed to having those side buttons. So it got rid of those buttons on the side, and it's made completely of glass all around.
Yeah, so, the back buttons, the like volume up, down.
The volume up and power and on the side. Yeah, back. So here's my Nexus 5, and you can see I got this rocker button here. Can you see it there? Yeah.
Well, I think those might still stay.
Well, I don't know. Those are the only buttons that are on it.
Well, but the G2 had the buttons.
Oh, the G2 had those back there, right? Yeah, exactly. The back buttons right there.
The actual back plate buttons.
Yeah.
And if this rumor is to be believed. Of course, last week we had a rumor about Motorola having the next Nexus, but I think maybe the difference there is the next Nexus 4 being a Motorola and Nexus 5 being LG. That would mean, oh, interesting. We have a Nexus 4 and a Nexus 5.
Well, the pipeline. They got to have the pipeline ready.
There you go.
So, and then another rumor around HTC, the new HTC Zara. Some details came to light on this plastic mid-range variant of the HTC One. It's been much rumored that the Zara exists, and we got a leak of a rendering of it with a 4.5-inch QHD. It's a 960 by 540 pixel display, and it's rumored to have a dual-core 1.2 gigahertz Snapdragon S4 Plus processor, 1 gigabyte of RAM, 8 gigabyte internal storage, and possibly sub-$100 price point. Mm-hmm. So that's HTC in their one platform ever expanding.
Mm-hmm. One so. Times X.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, it's nice. It's interesting to see a lower price, kind of option popping up there.
Yeah. Russell, where do you stand on the next Nexus? Are you getting any sort of kind of strong feelings either way as far as like Motorola, LG, what we might see?
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning more towards LG, because I think. I think a lot of people would have a lot of questions if Motorola popped up as the next Nexus. I think people would ask a lot more questions about, you know, how a Nexus phone gets chosen if Motorola's, you know, were to kind of automatically pop up there. And LG's hardware, you know, for the Nexus 4, it's really hard to argue. It was, you know, they did a really good job with that phone despite not being, you know, LTE capable. So I think it would be really reasonable to see LG come back for another round.
At what point is it okay for Motorola to then release a Nexus? Because you have to imagine if they don't this season, they have to do it eventually. They couldn't go the other way and be like, oh, well, we're Motorola, so we'll never do a Nexus.
I feel like there would be a lot of pressure on it. Like, they'd have to get it completely right. I think that's the way it's going to go, but whether or not it's the right time or not, I think that's a bigger question.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and Motorola had two launch devices with Google. Mm-hmm. You know, for two different versions of Android, both a phone and a tablet. So it's not like as a company, you know, they're not new to the concept. They weren't Nexus phones, but they were, you know, before, I guess, the Nexus program was really, you know, as finalized as it is now.
Right. Yeah. Very good point.
Like, now that Moto X is out, I mean, now that the Moto X is out, I feel like that, you know, they've proven that they're not the default Nexus maker.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like you want it to just be a good phone. I don't know. At this point, it's like, how far is Google going to bend over backwards to prove to all the manufacturers that they're not showing favoritism? I mean, with, you know, stocking Google, the Play Store with different manufacturers' phones, does it really matter? I mean, does the Nexus phone really sell better than the GS4 or the HTC One? It doesn't matter. The Nexus phones are for you know, a particular kind of user. I just don't think it's that big a deal. It seems inevitable. And I feel like once, now that they put out the Moto X, if they made the new Nexus, I don't think it would be that big a deal.
Yeah.
The Moto Nexus.
The Moto Nexus.
Ooh, the Moto capital Nex. X.
There you go.
And two X's to indicate, or to, you know, indicate a big battery. Okay, real quick, I have right here.
I've been wondering what your shoes were like.
Oh, these, it's got to be the shoes. Actually, it's not shoes. It's a WikiPad. You remember hearing about the WikiPad?
I do.
It's a gaming tablet. It's a 7-inch tablet here. There we go. Nice little tablet, right? And then underneath here, this is the full Monty. I'll go ahead and reveal.
Whoa.
The gigantic controller.
Whoa. That is enormous.
Yeah, it is. So slide this.
That is enormous.
There. Whoa. Roar. There you go. It's a gigantic gaming tablet, basically. I'll go ahead and launch Riptide GP2 here. I don't have the sound, and obviously it's very smudgy, but $250, NVIDIA Tegra 3 quad-core CPU and a fifth battery saver core, they say. Battery life, I've only been playing with it for a little over 24 hours, but so far so good. I haven't had to charge it yet, and I played a decent amount of games. Let's see here. 1 gig of RAM, 16 gigs of memory, micro SD, 7-inch, obviously, display with 1280 by 800, so similar to kind of the first version Nexus 7, I believe, 4,100 milliamp hour battery. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a gaming tablet. So far, so good. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It does get a little heavy because, I mean, it's huge.
I try it.
Right? You go ahead and, yes.
Oh, it's not as heavy as I thought it would be.
I don't know. Over time, though, when you're holding onto the gaming pad and playing with it, it just kind of seems.
Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel it
weigh down.
Yeah. I tell you, from here, that thing looks giant and awkward.
Oh no, it's enormous.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
It's as big as Ron's face.
It's just, you know, larger than Ron's head almost.
It's bigger than my head.
So there we go.
This is fascinating. Yeah. Now, does it only work with the tablet and the controller as a pair? Does that only work if I had
You couldn't put another tablet in there.
You could not.
Yeah, so you'd have to use the WikiPad tablet. Yeah. As far as I can tell, anyways, because, you know, they have the connector in the bottom that's specifically located there, and the volume rocker and all that stuff on the top there. But so far, so good, you know. Some games work with it better than others. They have a whole list on their site of games that are immediately compatible with it. But, you know, there's just so many different buttons, and a lot of the games aren't necessarily specifically designed to give you hints on what goes to what. It's just kind of mapped underneath. So it's almost like every time you launch a game, you kind of have to guess where the mappings are.
There's no home button. I mean, other than the button on the tablet.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's just, like the going from the controller to the I mean, like that's just it's confusing. That's all. Interesting little launcher though.
But yeah, number of games that I had already purchased over the last few years are compatible with it. So I'm going to be doing a lot of game playing apparently.
Yeah,
it's a bummer reviewing devices like
that. It's
hard.
It's a tough life, isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
As big as it seems, it. From here, it looks like it would actually feel less awkward in the hand than the NVIDIA Shield.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember. I played around with the NVIDIA Shield a little bit at I.O., but not – one thing I will say between the NVIDIA Shield and this is that it's really nice having that bigger screen because the NVIDIA Shield isn't a 7-inch screen, right?
It's small.
A 5-inch.
Yeah, it's 5-inch. I really like having this larger 7-inch screen on this and you know, just being able to pop that tablet out and suddenly it becomes a 7-inch tablet. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. $250 is not that much when you consider, you know, tablets, 7-inch tablets are commonly in that price range these days. So you're paying for, you know, something that's a little bit more designed for gameplay, obviously. Right. And yeah, so far so good. I think I'm going to be reviewing it for possibly next week's Before You Buy, but I'm enjoying it so far.
I'll be interested to see what you think of it.
There we go. I think the WikiPad was plagued, like it had been expected to come out, and then it was delayed and everything, so it's finally out. So
it's perfect that you're playing Sonic on it because it looks like a gigantic Game Gear. So.
Right, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. See, and Sonic is one of them that I know is compatible, but so watch this.
Oh, there we go.
But if you push that as if it were a button. So that's weird, right? Like, I'm sure there's a way to remap
that. Changes
that.
Things, yeah, yeah.
But, like, I wouldn't want to play an entire game like that.
Yeah, that's frustrating, yeah.
Directional thing down.
Totally dumb question. So this, the tablet actually has contacts that, like, connect to the button. So you can't, you can't stick an Nexus 7 in there.
Down in the very bottom.
Yeah, take it apart.
Down the very bottom.
Oh, I see there. There's
it's just the USB connector.
Yeah, it's the micro USB. If it were placed exactly the same on the Nexus 7, and I would imagine the kind of the dimensions of the tablet fit the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very form fitting, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You need a tablet.
It's designed to fit specifically this tablet. Yeah. I don't know how well a Nexus 7 would fit in there, if at all. But I would imagine there's a few variables that would mean that it probably wouldn't. Well, weird. We have an Nexus 7 on studio. We can test it out. All right.
Wait. Yeah, that's going to not go at all.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. I could already tell.
there you go.
And this is the end of the review.
There you go.
It's broken. No.
I don't know. Hang on. Cut away. Cut away.
I would trust that. That doesn't look very good.
All right, so.
Yeah, that looks.
Yeah, it looks a little broken. Yeah,
but then you want to go horizontal and it won't work. Yeah, it will. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's actually hooked up or not.
Because, I mean, when you put this in, it does the forced landscape.
Right, and it didn't do that. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So,
Portrait gaming. Oh, yeah. So I guess it's possible to house your tablet in there. Probably all you're going to get is a charge out of it at best. So, well, there you go. WikiPad. I'm going to spend some time with it and see, but
fascinating.
Nice to have a little specific gaming tablet.
Yeah.
Play around with it.
Excellent. Well, and if you get that tablet, if you do use the Wiki tablet, you're probably going to want to take care of it, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. So I totally want to take care of it.
Now it's probably a great time to hear from our sponsor, Lookout. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. And if you care about your Android phone or your tablet as much as Jason does and the information on it, Lookout's protection is a must. They have the world's largest mobile threat data set and use it to tackle all kinds of mobile security issues, from identifying new threats to finding lost phones and fighting cybercrime. Lookout for Android provides automatic protection from malware, adware, and spyware. I almost said Android instead of adware.
Which would be accurate.
Protects you from Android.
Yeah, it protects you from Android. They've got the best Find My Phone solution in the market, which includes Lock Cam, where you can protect your phone or tablet from prying eyes, get an email with the picture and location of anyone who incorrectly enters your passcode on your device 3 times. They also have Signal Flare, where when you can't locate your phone if the battery's dead. So with Signal Flare, a feature which emails you the location of your phone when the battery is very low, so you'll get a much better idea of where it's located. It's got full contact backup and restore, and all of this is available for Lookout Premium on Lookout Premium for Android for no more than $2.99 a month or $29.99 a year. So that's got picture backup restore, safe browsing, where you can surf the mobile web safely and knowing that every site you visit, including links from emails, text, and Facebook, is safe. They've bolstered Find My Phone protection with remote lock. And in case you're worried your phone has fallen into the wrong hands, they've also got Privacy Advisor, where you can see and manage all the apps that access personal information, such as your location, contacts, SMS, and MMS data. They've got all this, and it's available for free security solutions for iOS and Amazon Kindle Fire. Lookout worries about your security so you don't have to. So go to lookout.com/AAA to learn more and get the free download. That's lookout.com/AAA. We thank their support of All About Android. And definitely check out that Lookout Premium offer for $2.99 a month or $29.99 a year. It's definitely worth worth the money to protect your data and protect your devices. Just being able to find them alone and that little signal flare stuff is really amazing.
Yeah, so, Lookout's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we've had their app on the show plenty of times before they were even sponsoring the show. So it's great to have Lookout on board. Thank you guys for sponsoring All About Android. Go check them out, lookout.com/AAA. All right, let's get into apps. Well, Google had a few big updates to some of their, I'd say, marquee apps for Android this week.
Huge updates, in fact.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Starting with Google Plus, a few things that we've been hoping for or wondering about have finally come to pass here. First, Messenger is gone. No more Messenger in your app tray. You may have wondered why it was still there if Hangouts was kind of the bee's knees. It's gone. Though suddenly there's an icon for something called Google Plus Photos, which is essentially a shortcut to the photos on your Google Plus app, which I kind of feel like, why? No need. Why is that there? I'll get to it through the app, but apparently they want people to know that they can store their photos in Google Plus.
One tap access.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't that make sense?
But if I wanted a shortcut, I'd create my own shortcut. Why make another app for my tray?
How many shortcuts do you have on your I don't use shortcuts at all.
Well, that's exactly. Yeah. If I wanted a shortcut to Google Plus, I would have made it. There you go. Location sharing. They actually did some really cool stuff here. So some of the things that were missing, in the transition away from Latitude are kind of back more or less, greatly enhanced. They allow you to limit your view to specific members of a circle. They don't allow you to limit it to just a certain user. But what you could do is you could create a circle that is just your Latitude circle or whatever you want to call it. For me, it would be my wife. So I know when she's going to, where she's stuck in traffic on the way home from work from San Francisco, put her in a circle. And then all I have to do is pull up that circle and I can see where she's at. Also telling you when the last location pull actually happened, and that's something that was missing. So now I can know that this is effective as of 10 minutes ago, that person is there. So that's great. Love that. Google Drive photos and videos are now accessible through the Google Plus app. Easy switching of your accounts and pages from within the app. Better apps for business integration, which I know some people are really excited about. And then a few other little things. Pull to refresh, which is always nice. When you have your notifications, you may notice that if you tried to right swipe them to get them off of the notification, you actually just swiped away the tray.
Yes.
So now you have to program yourself to only left swipe to get rid of the notification. Little nerdy stuff like that. But and just all in all, the app just continues to look better and better. Just Google Plus has come so far. I'm so proud of you, Google Plus.
It's growing up.
It's growing
up. It's grown up.
By the way, I just checked. You can share with individual people.
Can you?
Yeah.
Share with individual people or just only see one person?
You can turn on your sharing with only one
person. No. So that's...
Okay.
That you've been able to do. So you can just share your location with a particular person. And that's actually how I use it. I only really share with my wife, basically. This is the other way. So this is like you go into locations and you say, I only want to see the location of this person on the map right now. I think by default and the way it was before, it just showed you anyone that in your circles that's sharing location data with you, you can now see them. And there was no real way, easy way to just drill it down to just that one person. Right. Now you can. Good stuff. Oh, there you go.
So in addition to that, there was a massive update to YouTube for Android, which almost begs the question of what took them so long. Like when I saw the new app roll out and I saw what they had added, I was like, oh yeah, it's been a while since the YouTube app has been updated. So the version 5 update is pretty major for those who've checked it out. And I don't know if you're going to
talk through it because
it's actually some really kind of amazing stuff if you dig deep to it. Well, first off is that they've switched to the card-based UI that we're so familiar with on from Google Plus and things like that. So now you can see videos kind of organized in that similar Google card display. It's your phone right there. Yeah. It's got the slide-out navigation with the latest hamburger-style guidelines in mind. So there it is. So you get your straight-up menu, and you can see your subscriptions and what to watch and all the various kind of things you want to do. Quick access to your history, favorites, playlist uploads, all that stuff. You can now search for playlists, which is interesting. Previously, searching for playlists was a little difficult. You had to search for individual videos and then find the playlist that they're on. You no longer need to tap the down arrow on the video page to give a thumbs up, thumbs down, or flag. The HD and closed captioning toggles have moved from the bottom left edge of the video to the menu, and then it crashes.
Oh.
Now it can scale up for tablets. So if you're on a 7-inch Nexus 1 or a Nexus 7 or whatnot, it will be a fully functional tablet UI, which is nice. And that card navigation really helps with that. YouTube now honors the global auto rotate setting and doesn't flip the landscape if auto rotate is off, which is awesome. but what's interesting, and this is, I don't know if you want to show this or not, but this little bit is the in-app multitasking, which is just fascinating.
Of course you want to show this.
Yeah, so...
Maybe it's why it crashed on me.
Yeah, that's probably why. So when you're watching a video, you can make any video you're watching into a smaller window just by swiping it down, pressing the down arrow in the top left corner, or pressing the back button.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So there's the video that he was watching. So you can minimize it and then
swipe it away or you can keep it down there and continue browsing, right?
That's really interesting to see in-app multitasking from within Google. I think that's the more fascinating aspect of it. I don't know what you need to be doing in YouTube that you need to minimize your video while you're looking for your next video or whatnot. But since the whole purpose is to watch, is to watch videos. But if you're watching Tech News Today and you want to go and you want to browse the other videos and you want to add them to your playlists or add them to your queue, you can do that. So
that's just within the YouTube app, right? You can't switch to another app and have a floating video.
Correct. Like it's within the app itself. Correct. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah. If you pop out of the app, then you lose the video. So
I'll go home and I think it goes away. Yeah.
But still,
that's a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. I have yet to see that from an official, aside from music where you can play Google Music and go use other apps. I haven't seen that level of media kind of in-app multitasking yet. So. That was interesting. So new YouTube. If you're a big YouTube fan, there you go. Also, I noticed when I went to the new YouTube thing, it asked me what account I wanted to access YouTube via. Mm-hmm. I've got several different Google accounts, YouTube accounts. So that was interesting. So
yeah, cool. I mean, nice. And that's kind of a theme between these two app updates, and Google is wise about the fact that people have multiple app accounts for these services. Thankfully, they're making it a little bit easier. Have you had a chance to play around with either of these, and what do you think about them, Russell?
So I actually got the YouTube update on my Moto X like 5 minutes before the show started. And it hadn't actually showed up on my HTC One yet, so I hadn't had a chance to play with it. But I've been using the Google Plus update all weekend long, and it was really solid. I mean, the entire app is just such a huge improvement. That it was really impressive, and I've heard so much about the YouTube update that I'm very eager to play with it as well.
Yeah, it's a solid update. They really, really did a lot of cool stuff on this update. So check it out. Another cool thing you can do with YouTube is Chromecast stuff.
Yes.
Yes, actually, we have a little Chromecast update. Last week, we were talking about how Coach Dudo was working on that that AirPlay app. Or AirPlay-like app, and he is actually released an APK. He followed up a tease we talked about last week, how he was showing how pretty much anything with media intents could be shared to a Chromecast, and we showed that he actually flung All Bad Android from the official non-official, but a Twit TV app that didn't have the Chromecast built in to his TV, which was really cool. Well, this week he released a beta build, an APK, on his Google Plus page. I love this. It's a beta testing build, and he said that it would self-destruct in 2 days, and he posted it on the 18th. So today's the 20th. I just downloaded it to my HTC One, so it still hasn't self-destructed yet. But it basically lets you cast Chromecast locally stored files onto your TV, and you can do it from Dropbox, you can do it from Drive, you can do it from Gallery. And from what I understand, he's actually bypassing all the Chromecast sort of restrictions around the things that you can't do. I don't even think he's actually using the SDK. I think he reverse engineered the protocol to get this to work. So I don't know what the future of this app is going to be once this APK self-destructs. I mean, no doubt he's going to continue to work on it. I don't know how he's going to distribute it, if he's going to distribute it to the Play Store or just as an APK out there, but really cool to see him playing around with the protocol and pushing limits on what it can do.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's called...
It works really well, too.
Aircast. Play any video from your Chromecast.
Have you played around with this, Russell?
I've been using it a ton, mostly to grab stuff from like the gallery on my phone, but also I have a ton of stuff that I use for editing in Dropbox. So I was trying that out as well. And it took, you know, an hour-long video that I had in Dropbox and put it over to my television with no problems. It's really impressive. And yeah, he basically reverse engineered the entire thing. He's not a big fan of waiting, apparently.
And he's incredibly smart.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
really cool. So what kind of definition are the files that you're casting up onto the TV? Were they pretty high definition, and did it show any sort of like skipping or lagging or anything like that?
Yeah, so I had a couple of 720p files and a couple of 1080p files, and the 1080p files, it took a little bit longer for them to actually reach my television. Mm-hmm. I think the longer one took right around 45 seconds before it actually started casting. But it, you know, once it started, there were no problems. It just, you know, has to actually buffer and get there first, because it's weird the way that it works from the gallery. What it's essentially doing is starting a media server, and then, you know, the Chromecast can pull it as though it is downloading something from the web. Mm-hmm. So that's how that function works. And that ends up being a little resource intensive to do things that way. But it's definitely a cool concept.
That's awesome.
Cool.
I love it. I love Chromecast.
I'm still waiting for mine to get delivered.
I
haven't gotten it yet. It hasn't come in. Oh. I lagged. Because I was like, I don't need it. I have the Google TV. And then I'm like, oh, it's only $35. And I broke down. And it's supposed to ship this week. Let's check
the protocol's down. Been reverse engineered. You haven't even gotten it yet, man. Wow.
I know.
I just got to say, in my time playing with Chromecast, it's like I've seen the light. I'm like, this is the remote of the future. This is what it's all about. Yeah. For my 3.5-year-old daughter, all she needs is one of our phones. She knows the Netflix app. Maybe she shouldn't, but she knows the Netflix app really well. And she now knows that she picks – I mean, she's 3.5. She picks up the Netflix, launches it, hits the little Chromecast box. The bottom button is for living room. And then, you know, she's like, oh, I want to watch this. And then just waits at the TV and it appears. It's like, it's the most intuitive thing
it's
in the world.
So cool. Yeah.
The most unintuitive thing is like hitting that box at the beginning, knowing to do that. But a 3.5-year-old can do it. So – It's pretty dang easy.
Well, according to UPS, my Chromecast is in La Verne, Tennessee, and it will be delivered on Monday. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if it makes it.
Monday.
So. I'm excited for you. Yeah, no, it's Chromecast is great.
It is. It really is.
Really love it.
Cool.
All right. We got a video mail. I love video mails.
I do too.
Charles sent us this video mail. It's another help me out in my love connection video. I'm happy this is a theme. Here we go.
Hey, AAA crew. This is Charles Miller from Fredericksburg, Virginia. I got a quick question for you guys. It actually might be a little hard question, but hopefully you or someone in the chat room can answer it, and I really need your help because it's my girlfriend's phone. But so the question is, I flash 4.3 onto her phone. Usually when I flash a ROM, I do an Android backup, or I do a Titanium or Helium. In this case, I did a Helium backup without doing an Android. So I moved that Helium folder over to a PC, completely wiped her phone, flashed 4.3, moved that Helium folder back over to her phone, re-downloaded the Helium app thinking that I would just be able to restore those files, and the Helium app will not see that backup file that I took off and moved back over. I've looked in forums and seen this problem with other people, and I was wondering if anyone knew an application or if anyone knew a way to get Helium to see that backup folder that I moved back over, and if not, if they knew of another application that could see those Android backup files and reflash them to the phone. I've tried WebFresh's one-click root as well, and that will work if I try to do the restore the Android backup with that, but it only does one application at a time and reboots the phone after every one, so that would take forever to get that back.
Wow. She
really needs her Candy Crush scores back. So if you can give me any help, thanks.
Awesome. Nice. So it took me a little while to like wrap my head around this one initially, and I did some searching around. I think I found a solution for you. Over in the XDA Developers Forum, I have the link at the show notes, twit.tv/AAA. There's a thread, and within that thread, there's a couple of people that were able to accomplish this. Sounds like they had the same problem that you had, and they were able to accomplish it by basically doing this, and stay with me on this. So you've already, you know, copied your files to the Carbon folder. You've backed up your data. You've wiped the data off the phone. What you do next is you actually install the apps that you want to restore. Just install them like normal from the Play Store. And then install Carbon and back them up. What that does is that makes an official folder for all those backups based on those apps. And then you use your computer to move over the backup files that you had from your initial backup into those folders that Carbon created officially. If you do that, supposedly, it will see the backup and you'll be able to restore them. So yeah. It's a little bit of work, but it's not as bad as installing and rebooting every single time.
Oh, that would be just amazing.
No matter what, you're kind of in for a little bit of work, but it sounds like there's a solution. So check the show notes at twit.tv/AAA. Carbon and Helium are the same thing. Carbon was the name of it before it got changed to Helium. So they're the same thing. Sorry about that. Any confusion there. But there you go. Hope that helps.
Nice. All right. Some brave people out there touching a girlfriend's phone.
I know, man. Wow. Not only that, but like flashing the ROM and like all that stuff. Like,
I know.
When I look at my wife's phone funny, like she doesn't talk to me for the rest of the day. She just knows better, because I've broken my phone so bad sometimes that like it's just not even allowed anymore.
I would just keep significant others and parents' phones as stock as possible, as just like nothing special about them, and just let them work. Let them text message and play games and let it work.
Yeah, I'm biting my lip because my wife has never wanted me to do any of that to her phones, and now she does for her Galaxy Nexus performance issues and for tethering.
It's a dangerous road, man.
So yeah. I'm like, oh man, I'm not sure. Are you sure this is going to change things, Stacey?
Changes our relationship.
Are you sure you want to go down this road? This could really change.
Listen, there are kids involved. That's all I'm saying. There are two kids involved now.
Two kids is one thing, but flashing your phone, that's a whole other level.
Yeah.
Okay, you realize once we do this, we can never go back.
We can never go back, yeah.
So I'll let you know how that goes, because I have a feeling I'm probably going to do that over the weekend. Let's thank our final sponsor of today's episode. Happy to welcome back 99 Designs, connecting people looking for great graphic design with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers and growing every day from all over the world. It's just they have a tremendous community of talented graphic designers that are there, able to work with you for your project and offer you some really neat designs. If you need a new logo, mobile app, business card, t-shirt, any kind of graphic design, you're going to find the right designer at 99 Designs for your project. Here's how it works. You tell 99 Designs what you need. Dozens of designers from their community will submit designs created just for you. This is all unique to your project. You give the designers your feedback, you help them refine their designs, and then you select and pay for your favorite. And this is actually incredibly helpful for people who are developing apps. Specifically, obviously for this show, if you're developing an Android app, you can get anything from icons, buttons to your entire mobile app designed at 99 Designs, and you can just check out a ton of amazing apps designed at 99 Designs. And I know, what do you have up here? What are you looking at?
Currently I'm looking at, it looks like a weather app. I went to 99 Designs Google.com/mobile app design.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of them. Like, here's footy battle.
Some great stuff.
Footy
yeah.
battle.
And you can see the entries here for footy battle. And this looks amazing. Like it really not only is just one any one of these look good, but there's a whole bunch. Yeah, there's tons and tons.
Exactly. You're not just putting the work out for one designer to be like, oh, okay, I made this thing. Does this look okay? It's like you're empowering the masses, and in doing so, you get so many options to choose from in the end. So you don't have to just settle, and it's not going to take you a huge amount of time.
Yeah,
you're
just
going to look through the options and pick your favorite.
I love that collection of different perspectives, and you take the same challenge and see what different designers do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, it's a cool approach. So 99designs allows you to do all of this easily, and you can actually start your next graphic design project for as low as $199. Just visit 99designs.com/AAA. You can get a $99 power pack of services for free. And a power pack, if you don't know, it actually gives you more designer time and attention. 99designs will actually bold and highlight and feature your design project in the marketplace at 99designs, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs as a result. So if this all sounds good to you, visit 99designs.com/AAA and get started. Very easy, very cool service. I love what they do and what they offer. We thank 99designs for their support of All About Android. Now, this is going to get interesting. Today's arena is going to be a little bit different. I don't think anyone knows about this. I'm going to pull out a little can of whoop-ass here. So
whoa.
Let's jump into the arena.
Whoa!
That's fight words.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena. All right, so
you may have wondered why we had these little characters here.
What? I was wondering what the markers were for. What the?
So what do we have?
So we have
the hosts
of All About Android. I'm not sure how we're going to do this, Ron, but we've got two battle robots here.
Right.
So I'm going to go ahead and turn this on. I'm not sure which controller controls what.
How do you use these?
Why
can I beam myself to Petaluma right now?
I really wish you could.
So for those on the audio listeners, they have an actual arena with androids inside of them.
All right, so turn your controller on, Ron.
I did.
Okay, now I think they're going to sync, right? Oh. Okay, so here's how it works. When I go like this, oh.
Whoa.
Yeah, see? All right, who's going down? Go. Oh, I'm sorry, Gina.
Gina's out.
Oh, man, I think I'm beating myself up right now.
It looks like Ron's the winner.
Woo! Oh, no, Ron's the winner. This is as exciting as that one game that I reviewed.
How do I turn around?
Yeah, well, you just kind of go like this and it punches.
Oh.
Yeah, that was... That's like real... Oh, man. Oh, he's totally controlling both of them. How did that happen? Well, apparently you can fight yourself in the arena.
It's interesting is that I didn't know I was controlling them both, and yet I still won. So there we go.
Well, I think you rigged it, Ron.
How do you change it? How do you change it? So
I don't know.
This is later.
I think I have to protest. Okay, you both went for me instantaneously.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that happened. I think you were just in the center.
Uh-huh. Not sure why it happened.
Yeah. Don't take it personally, Gina.
You go for the person on Skype. See, Russell, this is how it works.
This is
I do. I didn't even get one. Like I didn't.
See, I wish I had thought about this sooner. This was literally like 10 minutes before the show. Me and Alex were like, what could we do? Oh, wow. Let's put this all together.
You can't get the drop on me. That's what we've learned.
Whatever. All right.
You guys don't know what it's like when Jason pulls these surprises. This has become a thing now. Between this and the faux glass, the Google Glass thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're becoming unpredictable. I like it.
All right. Yeah. Excellent. So. I don't mind being the unpredictable person. I think we're all a little unpredictable, actually.
You're the wild card. You're the Murdoch of our group.
Excellent. Let's take a look at last week's arena. Probably not as exciting as that arena, but close. And Cheapcast, boom, 50%. Wow.
That's what you could do right now, Ron.
I know.
You could run CheapCast and start having fun. Yep. 50% of the votes, Lose It, second place at 30%, and Dribbler 2.0, third place at 19%. So, unfortunately, Gina, that does mean that you are going first, and I will move you up there.
I'm going first.
And I will hopefully show off your app. Let me figure out which device I have it installed on. But yes, go ahead and talk about it, and I'll show it off.
All right. So my app this week, my app pick this week is for people who lay in bed at night and play a game or read an ebook or sort of surf the web right before they go to sleep. Scientific research has shown that exposing your eyeballs to a bright screen, a certain kinds of light right before you go to sleep actually messes up your melatonin, which is the chemical that helps you get to sleep at night. So my pick this week is an app called Twilight. It is free. And what it does is helps you go to sleep when you're using your phone or your tablet right before you're going to sleep. And the way that it does that is it makes your device adapt to the time of day. So it filters the blue spectrum light on your phone or tablet after sunset, which protects your eyes with kind of this reddish filter. And you can adjust the intensity of the red filter. So Jason's got it running right there. So Twilight looks good on a tablet and a phone. So you go into it and you're in the settings there, and you can change the intensity of the filter and how much the screen dims. And basically, it detects your location and figures out when sunset is in your area. And then as the day progresses, it just kind of seamlessly, naturally in the back, dims your screen and softens that blue filter, right? So you just tap the preview button so you can see kind of what it does to your screen over time. When I first looked at this app, I thought, this is going to drive me crazy. I don't want anything messing with my with the screen brightness. But I left it on, so I was kind of like, let's see what happens. And I got to tell you, I really, really like it. I use my phone a lot at night, particularly when, right before I'm going to bed, I'm setting the alarm, or if I'm reading a book, or if I'm checking email or whatever. And the screen is just much less glary with Twilight kind of running in the background. Of course, this is something that you could probably very easily do using something like Tasker, or just adjusting the brightness itself. But this isn't just the brightness that adjusts. It actually reduces that blue light, which is the light that kind of messes with your sleep processes. And you can actually see on the Twilight app page, it kind of it cites the scientific research that shows the way that being exposed to bright screens and that blue light right before you go to sleep actually messes with your melatonin. And it turns out that if you're using a screen, or if you're looking at a screen, or using a phone or tablet right before you go to bed, that can delay how long it takes you to get to sleep by almost an hour, especially if you're kind of a light sensitive sleeper. So Twilight is free. You enable it. It shows up in your notification shade, and it'll tell you, hey, I'm running. And you can tap it to pause it from running. There's an option in the settings to say, hey, take me out of the notification shade. It doesn't work on every device. It didn't work on my HTC One. It annoyed me a little bit that it was stuck in my shade, and I couldn't take it out because I don't like stuff that I don't like stuff kind of cluttering up my notification shade. But I have to say, it really was worth it, and it just was easier on my eyes. My eyes are pretty sensitive, and I think one of the first things I do when I set up a text editor is kind of set up a darker background. And this is really nice because it adjusts sort of automatically based on sunset times. And there's tons of settings there. You can force it to only go manually. You can say only activate when I'm in certain apps. So if, say, certain apps are super bright, or certain apps you only use at night, it'll only activate on those apps. I just left it on for the default. I adjusted the brightness and the filter a little bit to my liking. And it's really nice. It's easier on the eyes and helps you sleep. So that's what it is. Twilight. And there's it's free, but there's a donate version. That's $250 if you want to support development of the app.
Awesome. Cool. I'm going to have to check this out because every night. Every night, I get into bed and check Reddit right before turning off my phone and falling asleep. It's like my nighttime reading for 20 minutes before I go to bed. So
yeah,
that color temperature control is that's what's the killer on it. That's pretty cool. So
awesome,
nice,
cool. That is Twilight. Now I'm very curious to find out. Let's see here.
You're just throwing audibles left and right.
I know. Actually. Well, I know I go last.
I'll go next.
Yeah,
I'll
go Ron.
I'll go next.
You go Ron.
All right. So those of you who watch the show or follow me on social media and whatnot probably know two things about me, at least more recently. One is that I'm very big on getting things done. I'm very big on productivity, like Gina. I'm very big on GTD apps and things like that. But I also, I've been known to partake in a game every once in a while. Currently, right now, I'm enjoying Civilization V, keeping me up late at night as I'm trying to take over the world. So when I came across this app, it was like a dream had come true. It's that someone take my favorite aspects of role-playing games and merge them with my favorite aspects of getting things done, and the result is called Habit RPG. This is an app that it's not new. It's been a web app for a while. Actually, when I was on the Google Play Store page, I saw they've embedded a video of our friend Veronica on Techzilla talking about the web app version. There's Veronica. You can see her. But basically what it is it's a productivity application that separates your tasks into things called habits, dailies, and to-dos. So the idea being our habits are things that you do on a habitual basis, whether they might be good or bad. Dailies are things that you do on a set schedule and repetitive. So you wake up every day, you go to sleep every day, you eat lunch every day, that sort of thing. And then to-dos are basically things you need to do. And what it does is you create your own personal avatar, and it applies, no joke, it applies value to those tasks. So if you have a habit, like, so here I've loaded it up on my app here. And so we can see, here's my habits menu. And I've got a habit of getting to inbox zero, which is, you see there's a little plus, that's a good thing. Eat Nutella, which I've been doing recently, which is a bad thing.
It's a good habit.
And go to the gym is a good thing. So when I do something, I tap on it and I tell it I did it. And what it does is, you see my little guy here, I've got hit points and I've got gold. And what you can do is you can earn gold or lose hit points based off what you do. And it basically awesome. It turns your productivity into a game. So for example, on my dailies, every day I need to check my bank account and I need to review my news site. So I'm going to check the bank account. And so I did that. And here I just got 7.5 experience and 10 gold for doing that.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
On my to-dos, you can see here at work, I've got to review those documents and I got to write some requirements. So I'm going to review those documents. And I just got 7.5 experience and one piece of gold. And slowly but surely, you build up your reserves and then there are rewards. And so what you can do is, currently I've earned 5 gold pieces, and so you can set your own gold pieces, you can set your own rewards. So I said that if I want to spend 10 gold pieces, then I can play Civilization 5, or if I spend 20 gold pieces, I can go get In-N-Out Burger. Additionally, they have different things that you can buy within the app or the game. So if I get 30 gold pieces, I can buy leather armor for my little guy, and that will give me 4% reduced hit points loss. Or I can get a better sword, and that will give me 3% increased experience gain. And so you can see my little guy here. I can go to my profile. And so you see currently there's my little avatar, and I'm level 1. I've got 5 gold, 0 silver, you know, and I can see I've got 50 out of 50 hit points and 5 gold pieces and 37 experience out of 150. I need to get to 150 before I can level up. And basically it just makes your life into a game. And so you could conceivably add in every little habit that you have, whether it's good or bad, and you can add every daily thing you need to do, from, like I said, waking up and going to sleep and eating lunch and eating dinner, to checking your email, to going to a meeting or whatever, and then factor in your to-do list and the things that you need to get done throughout the day, and you can make your life a game. It requires an immense amount of discipline and honesty, because I got to be honest with you. If I'm driving down the 101 and I see an In-N-Out Burger, I don't know if I'm going to check this app to see if I have enough gold points to get it. But if you are looking for something to give you some discipline in your life, whether it's for fitness or for work or something like that, and you're able to stick to it and have fun with it, Habit RPG is a great way to do it. And it's got, you know, as you can see, it's got this great little 8-bit kind of design sense. And what's great is that, you know, it's both on Android and it's also a web app. So you can go manage your stuff via the web. Very simple, a lot of fun, and productive at the same time.
Now you need, or not you, but they need at some point to create some sort of like interconnectivity to where your guy yep. can battle somebody else's guy.
Yep. Or if you have productive. Like if you have like a meeting with somebody and like if you're in the same place yes. or like I do all about Android with Jason and you've got more we could do something like that. Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways. And it's totally free. You can turn your life into a game. It's totally free. So there you go. Habit RPG, a lot of fun. Check it out and be productive.
That's great. Yeah. I love
Very
it.
Very cool.
It's, I didn't take a look at the app. I just saw the title, and I was like, man, I hope this is what I think it is.
When I came across it, I was totally like, oh, is. You got to be. And then, like, and I saw the Veronica video. I'm like, oh, somebody already found it. But I saw it's the web version. So it's, yeah, there's the web version you can see. And you can customize your avatar. You can do that in the app too. I was really impressed actually with the functionality. They ported everything from the website over to the app. So it's pretty handy. It's pretty neat. So go win at life, get some goal points and save your hit points. So
awesome. Habit.
Nice.
RPG.
Good pick.
Yep. Yeah. Very good pick. All right, Russell, you are up next. I have it installed on my phone, so I'll try and keep up, but just go ahead.
I will be honest, out of everybody's apps, I'm most worried about Russell's beating me here. So,
All right, so stage is yours.
Portal is something I actually discovered this morning, and I actually installed it on a couple of things because as soon as I found it, I was really happy with how well it worked. It is an app that allows you to take this tiny disk image on your phone, and it basically hovers that image above everything else. So you've got this tiny little icon that you can move, and that icon is persistent. It floats over top of whatever app you have running. So if you have Chrome, you go to take a picture, any of those things, it keeps this thing running. And when you tap it, it gives you access to a series of applications that you can have loaded, which includes checking your messages, browsing the web, using Twitter or Facebook. And this little portal ring also serves as a notification service for those applications. So in the same basic way that Facebook Messenger works for Facebook Home, you can have text messages pop up, you know, and then they just kind of float over whatever it is that you're doing, and you can interact with it, you know, as you're doing other things. So I found it to be really, you know, kind of a neat way of doing things. I'm hopeful that it becomes, you know, more interactive with things like Chrome and stuff like that in the future, because the stock browser that it uses, I'm not a huge fan of. But for Twitter and text messages especially, I found it really useful.
It's very cool. It's a very cool little app.
Yeah, a little bit of you're right, like Chrome customization so that you could replace the browser would be nice on this. Is there any customization of any of these apps up here for the most part right now, or
not so far? And as far as I can tell, the app is brand new. Like it gotcha. It had just been released, but you know, it was a free app that I found, and it was, you know, really just a cool way of, you know, kind of getting some extra multitasking.
I see. So here's the applications. You have to imagine that they're going to add it in at some point to where you can just select what apps you want to be able to launch right from there and reprogram that and everything. Awesome. It's so interesting that Facebook and their Facebook Home chat heads has like spawned this whole kind of side category of apps.
I've seen so many pop up that are leveraging that. Like I saw one for phone heads and stuff like that. Yeah, this is neat though.
It's very different. It's very it's very Android, right?
Yeah.
It's this thing that you don't really see anywhere else right now. So that's awesome. So that is Portal. All right. By the way, when I first saw Portal, I was like, no way, they ported Portal.
That was my first thought, too. Yeah.
Okay, so let's see here. I do have a game, actually, speaking of games, and I actually quite like this one. It's called Drop Chord, and it's one of those kinds of games that really integrates music well into the mechanics of the game. Playing this and talking about it is going to be a challenge because it's kind of a chaotic game. That's kind of what it's all about.
Awesome.
It's brought to you by the fine folks at Double Fine. And essentially, it's and by the way, they just pushed out an update while we were doing this show that integrates Google Play game support. So I'm totally logged in as my own account here. So essentially, I'll see if I can give you. Do you have the audio, Chad? Turn it up. You have it? Okay. So on both sides, I'm going to hold down my thumb, and that's going to create a line between the two. My goal is to move around and pick up these things. Now, these things, you have to hover over them so that they'll disappear, right?
All right, now suddenly we're in the club. All right, so I'm trying to pick up these little dots by moving my thumbs around and connecting these lines to them. It gets really chaotic because at some point, these dark red lines start to get in there and you don't want to touch those. You have to avoid those, right? So maneuvering around them gets to be a little bit of a challenge. And, you know, if you put on headphones and play this, like, just the whole environment and, I mean, the visuals are very crazy. It really kind of pulls you into the whole experience. And it just kind of gets chaotic. The music is, they tout, 10 original full-length electronic tracks. And the way that this all works is that it all kind of stitches together seamlessly. So it's like you're listening to a continuous mix while you're playing the game, depending on what part of the levels you're at and everything. But it's just kind of a crazy, crazy game. Easy to kind of spend some time and waste some time, probably is more like it. But and it's very difficult, especially once you get into the later levels. Like how do you get that middle one? I can't quite get my fingers around. It's a challenge to play and talk at the same time. But anyways, I like it a lot. It's $2.99. It's a little pricey, but I've enjoyed it. Yeah, and that's right. You can't help but dance. Oh, I got to leave my fingers on there. Otherwise, it'll pause.
It's like, way to stop the music, man. Yeah. I'm feeling it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, don't worry. You can get down. It's cool. Yeah, see? Ha! Boom. All right. Well, there you go. All right.
We're getting the disco lights. I was all ready to do the fist pump and, you know.
So there you go. Drop chord. It's just kind of a neat little game.
It's like the rave scene from Spaced.
Yeah. and some of the later levels that you get into, you're just like, whoa, did I just take – what? Where am I right now? Where am I right now? Is this real life? That's the main question. Is this real life? So there you go. Drop chord, $2.99 by the Fine folks at Double Fine. There you go. Four very different apps today. Twilight, Habit RPG, Portal, and Drop Chord. Which is your favorite app from today's episode? You can make your voice heard because, after all, AAA is a democracy. So vote for your favorite app. Early reports are in, and as I expected, Habit RPG pulls out to an early lead. It's going to be the one to contend against because it's just.
I got to admit, sometimes you strike gold. I was worried that Gina might have found it before me, so that was my concern. Drop chord is pulling out,
pulling up ahead. There you go. We'll see how this pans out. But fantastic episode today, you guys. Russell, Holly, it's always a pleasure getting you on the show. Thank you for joining us once again.
Oh man, thanks for having me. It's always fun coming on, hanging out with you guys.
Absolutely. So, what do you have going on over at geek.com? You're doing a lot of writing these days. I love reading your stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of an interesting time right now. It's you know, pretty much doing stuff at geek.com full time. You know, as we move into the holiday season, lots of fun stuff going on. It's going to be weird this holiday season because I'm going to be probably shifting, you know, from mobile stuff to gaming stuff as well, with all the consoles coming out. So it'll be interesting.
Awesome. So people can just follow your work at geek.com. And is it Russell Holly on Twitter and Google Plus, I imagine, of course?
Yep.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us. I'm actually pretty excited about this. Next week, we have Ron Amadeo, now of Ars Technica. He's the guy that's been bringing all those awesome APK teardowns that we've had on the show many times. He was at Android Police. He just got picked up by Ars. That's a pretty big score for Ars Technica. So he's going to come on the show next week. And, you know, we can congratulate him then because I'm sure he's pretty stoked about the move. So. There you go. Ron, it's good to have you back.
What it was good to be back, on? Yeah. So go to about.me/RonXO. You can find all the links to my social network stuff like Google+ and Facebook and Twitter and all that fun stuff. And and go to imagecomics.com and check out the wonderful great world of Image comic books. And we've got DRM-free downloads from the website, so you can download your favorite comics, including The Walking Dead. Good times.
Good times had by all. Thank you, Ron. I'm realizing next week's going to be hard because we'll have two Rons.
Yes.
Oh. So
well.
We're going to have to call you by your football name, which is Richards.
All right. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. Yeah. Don't punch me.
Yeah.
Gina, what do you have going on these days?
Oh,
You can see everything I'm up to at ginatrapani.org. I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. So you should come on by and chat live and watch tomorrow with Leo and Jeff. And I build an Android app to do text, to do txt.com. And I also build an open source web app called ThinkUp, thinkup.com. Stop by thinkup.com and get yourself on the waiting list because we are working hard toward a public launch. That's going to be a lot of fun.
You're busy.
Very busy.
Yeah, you know.
We're all quite busy. If you look at it, actually, it's like,
yeah,
it's
true. Yeah. We've got a lot going on here. Yeah.
We seem to attract busy, other busy types. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's true. Another person who I know is busy all the time is Chad.
Busy,
in fact, I caught him off.
Chad's the secret witness.
I video switch in the dark. You didn't know, turn the lights down.
Chad's a whistleblower.
It all happened when one night in the Android studios
I switched the show behind the scenes here. Going on in my life, I do This Week in YouTube was a show all about YouTube. OMG Craft was a show all about Minecraft. I help with the All About Android show. I am doing my own stuff over at YouTube. You can head over to youtube.com/OMGChad. I do video Let's Plays and vlogs and that sort of stuff.
And that's All About Chad.
youtube.com/OMGChad.
And when he's got some free time, he's busy being a whistleblower, letting people know exactly what's happening behind the scenes of companies and the government. So
it happened on Thursday. There was
at what point did you know that the government was doing something wrong, Chad?
It was obviously apparent when I opened my email and there was an email from the associate director that said something is wrong. I didn't know quite what to do, so I came to you guys, the media, about
this. Something was wrong because somebody said something is wrong.
CR1, yes, Twilight will even dim Chad's hair. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Thank you, Chad. You always do a great job with the show. I really appreciate
it. He does. He's the best.
Thanks, Chad.
You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Still have a Kickstarter going. If you really want to get in on it, you can.
Don't be humble. It's raging.
It's like only a couple more days, right, Jason?
Yeah, well, it's about a week left. And it's doing pretty awesome.
If you haven't gone.
What's that?
Right.
Oh, they're making an iPhone based off of the album is what John's yelling behind me.
I didn't realize that's why they were making the gold plate.
The gold iPhone because of the yellow gold album.
The Kickstarter is going very well. If you want to hear the music that I've been working on, you can go to Kickstarter, search for Yellow Gold or Jason Howell. You'll find it there. And I don't know when this is going to release.
If he doesn't get triple funded, Ron's going to have to leave the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what people don't know. That's a stretch goal.
Right.
If we can earn $20,000 for Jason's album, I leave the show.
No, okay.
No,
but $20,000.
Wait a minute. Let's hear him out.
All right. I like what this guy has to say. All right, that's enough. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail. Be a part of the show. 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always leave us an email. AAA@twit.tv or a video mail like we got just a little bit ago. Who was it? It was Charles. Thank you, Charles, for that. Just send a link to your video to AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Google+. We're All About Android there as well as our names. Twitter, we are at Android Show. Show notes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. And past episodes can be found on the site, iTunes, and YouTube. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week for another episode of All About Android. Ah!